I do welcome each one again this morning. I pray that you've had a wonderful weekend. I was working this week, and I am behind, which is not usually in my mindset, but I was working this week to writing lessons for the intermediate Bible study group. And as I was preparing and writing the lessons that I was assigned for this quarter, I was looking and focusing on the story of the temple and the construction of the temple and that entire process. And as I was reading over those stories again, you know, that process that happened from David all the way through Solomon, all of those years that, you know, collectively make up that story, I was fascinated at the number of lessons that I saw and the Lord blessed to open up to me in that. And I wanted us to reflect on that time in history for just a little bit this morning, and I pray that the Lord can open up and I can share with you a few things that He showed me this week and what a blessing they have been to my life. And I have a few points that I'm going to make. I'll try not to be too lengthy, but as I said, it should be a story that's familiar to most of us, and it begins really in 1 Samuel chapter 7. So if you'll turn over there with me, you see the beginning of this process and this idea of the construction of the temple in Jerusalem happened from kind of a vision and a dream of one man. 2 Samuel chapter 7 verse 1 says, "And it came to pass when the king," that's David, "sat in his house, and the Lord had given him rest round about from all his enemies, that the king said unto Nathan the prophet, 'See now, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwelleth within curtains.' And Nathan said to the king, 'Go do all that is in thine heart, for the Lord is with thee.'" So David is expressing, he's saying, "Why am I living in this grand house that has just been constructed for me, the king of Israel, while the Lord himself is worshipped in the tabernacle or in a tent?" That's what that expression "in curtains" means, within curtains. You got to remember at the time they were still worshiping in the tabernacle. And as fancy as the tabernacle might have been, at the end of the day it was still just a tent, right? And David had it in his heart. He had this feeling, this desire to build a house of physical and permanent residence for the tabernacle and for the worship of God in the city of Jerusalem. And this vision, this desire and dream that he had in his heart, I think, was good. And it was sincere and it was godly. And it's a wonderful reminder to us of the importance of following our hearts and seeking the Lord's guidance when we have these feelings and these desires that are placed upon our heart for these sincere and good and godly things before the Lord. But at the end of the day, one of the first things that we learn from this story is that even though David's dream and his vision was sincere and good and godly, God said no. God said no to David, to his desire to personally build the temple of God. And David tells us why, if you look at that passage in 1 Chronicles chapter 28. As he speaks just here, probably days before his passing, David tells the leaders of the nation of Israel why the Lord had denied David the leadership role in fulfilling this dream and this vision he had of building a temple for the Lord. If you look there in the second verse of 1 Chronicles chapter 28, it says, "Then David the king stood up upon his feet and said, 'Hear me, my brethren and my people. As for me, I had in my heart to build an house of rest for the ark of the covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God, and had made ready for the building. But God said unto me, Thou shalt not build an house for my name, because thou hast been a man of war and hast shed blood.'" So that was the reason that God gave to David of why he would not be allowed to be the leader of the construction of the temple. Because David was a king of war. We know that his from his anointing, one of the very first things that he goes out, even before he had fully become king, was that he slew Goliath, right? In all the early years that he fought and fled from Saul, in the early years of his leadership over the nation of Israel, were years of war, right? So he was a man of war. He was a king of war. And God's house was to be a house of peace. That was the plan and purpose of God. That was God's will. For his house, his permanent house of the construction of that temple, would be a house of peace. And so it had to be constructed and led by a man of peace. And that was the direction that he gave to David. Now, most of us, when we have a sincere or good desire in our heart, might think, well, that doesn't seem fair. You know, why wouldn't God allow me to, you know, to lead this dream and this vision that I have, this true and sincere desire that's upon my heart? But there's several wonderful lessons that we can see in this story, as I said, that I want us to consider this morning. And some of them David learned through this process. And you got to remember back there in 2 Samuel chapter 7, that is very early on in David's reign as king over Israel. And in those early years as he had become king, he had this desire and this dream very early. But the Lord told him no. And for us, we must know and understand that as the Lord works in our hearts, there are lessons that we learn through the process. And I hope that we can see some of them this morning. The first thing that I think is good for all of us to see and understand is that if you're going to dream, dream big because you serve a big God. Okay? Now, as you look at that story and you look back in 2 Samuel chapter 7 and you look into the Psalms and see some of David's personal convictions and expressions in regard to the temple, it was a very personal thing for David. He wanted to worship in the house of God. He wanted to inquire in his temple. You can see that beautiful passage. I think it's about the third verse of Psalm 27. One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek after. To inquire in his temple and to behold his beauty. Those were personal desires for David. But in this dream and this vision that he had to build the temple for the Lord in Jerusalem, what David found and discovered was he didn't fully understand at the beginning the generational importance and magnitude of this dream and this vision that he had. And for us, we must understand, as we have dreams and visions and sincere desires to do things for the Lord, do we truly understand sometimes the generational magnitude and effect that it will have on those that follow after us? David learned that from the building of the temple. He discovered that the temple was for more than just him. Though it was a personal and sincere desire that he wanted to experience, what the Lord showed him is that this dream and this vision is much bigger than just about you. It's not just about you. The building of the temple of God was going to be generational. It was going to have generational effects on the nation of Israel. It was going to be profound and it was going to be famous around the world. It was going to have huge ramifications. And David didn't understand that. His dream in the beginning was something that might have been very simple and very small. What the Lord opened up and revealed to him was the significance and the magnitude of this dream and vision of the temple of God. I thought about the saints that built this very house that we're sitting in right now. This section of the church was built in 1875. That's a pretty amazing thing that we stand here today, 150 years after the fathers and mothers that constructed this building. Do you think when they were building this that they were thinking about you sitting here 150 years later? Do you think that they had that in their mind with a hope and a faith and a desire that the saints of God in this area and in this community could come and worship the Lord and feel His presence 150 years after they had done their service in constructing this house to and for the Lord. I don't know if they did. There's no record in the minutes that they expressed, right? But I have to believe that each and every one of us is God's people, and especially among the church, we should have hearts and minds that have dreams and desires for the Lord, sincere and good and godly dreams and desires. But we should also open our hearts and minds to understand the generational magnitude of what we do and the effect that it can have for years and generations after us. What David learned and understood was the consequences of the construction of the house and the true size and scope and detail was far greater in God's plan than it was in David's dream. And God showed and revealed that unto him, okay? Churches today need to remember for each and every one of us as individuals and collectively as bodies. Because I think what we're seeing in Christianity a great deal in this country is that we're seeing churches and church bodies that are not dreaming enough. We're not having visions enough. We're not having desires for anything beyond ourselves and our immediate concerns and needs. The forefathers and mothers that founded this church on the frontier 193 years ago, and those that built this building 150 years ago, weren't just thinking and addressing their immediate needs. They were thinking ahead. They were following the Lord's leadership for generations that would come after them. And that's truly the heart of pioneers. It's truly the heart of those that go out into the frontier and have a mind and a heart to do things for the Lord. And in churches today, we need to be inspired again to be visionaries and to be dreamers and not be focused on just our immediate needs and how it can affect and help us personally. But we need to understand that much of what we do is for the generations that will follow after us. And the Lord revealed that and showed that to David in the building of the temple. He showed and revealed to him that it was going to affect far more people than he could ever possibly imagine. And for us, if we understand that generational effect and we truly have those big dreams and submit to God's will and plan and do our part in that dream to fulfill and see it come true, then we are truly walking together in accordance with God's will and purpose for our lives. Though David was not allowed to see the day when the temple would be completed and constructed, though David was not allowed to lead the nation of Israel through that process, David still had a role that he played. And he still had a part in the story of the construction. And it's a very beautiful and important part. Because though it was David's dream, it was God's plan that built the temple. And that's the next part that I saw in this story as I read and studied this construction of the temple that goes across several books here in Kings and Chronicles. The second point that I have for you this morning is if you're going to do something for the Lord, do it right, okay? If you're going to do something for the Lord, do it right. David had a dream. He had a desire, okay? But the Lord had a plan. The Lord had a plan. And He gave David the plan for his temple. It was much more detailed, much more complex, much bigger, as I said, than David probably ever thought that it should have been or could have been. And it shows the magnitude and the importance of the Lord's leadership in our visions and dreams. It's not just enough for us to dream and have visions as a church or as individuals. We have to see our dreams and our visions come and coincide with God's plan and purpose and will. And if you look there in 1 Chronicles chapter 28. We were there in verses 1 through 3, a minute, or 2 through 3. I want you to look down into verse 10 of that same chapter. Verse 10. So this is David speaking to Solomon. And he says, "Take heed now, for the Lord hath chosen thee," he's speaking to Solomon, "to build an house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it." Then David gave to Solomon his son the pattern of the porch, and of the houses thereof, and of the treasuries thereof, and of the upper chambers thereof, and of the inner parlors thereof, and of the place of the mercy seat, and the pattern of all that he had by the Spirit, of the courts of the house of the Lord, and of all the chambers round about, of the treasuries of the house of God, and of the treasuries of the dedicated things. So what had happened is, the Lord, though he did not allow David to lead and construct the temple, he gave David the pattern, the plans, the details, and David delivered those to Solomon. He showed him all the details and provided all the provisions for the construction of the temple so that it would be done right to the glory and honor of God. It wasn't enough for them to put what they wanted in there or to build it the way that they wanted it. God set a purpose and a plan and showed them how to do it the right way and required that if it was going to be dedicated to the Lord, you better do it right. Now, I thought on that and I think on that quite a lot. And I remember Brother Craig Campbell telling me a story couple years ago, and it was a funny story on Brother Archie Sapp. He said, Brother Archie and maybe a couple of the boys too had been over in Carlinville helping on a house that Craig and Cindy had bought there. And they were replacing the windows in the house, this old historic home there in Carlinville, Illinois, when he was pastoring at Concord Church. And Brother Archie had come over and was helping to replace those windows. And they'd get one done or another one done. And, you know, this was an old house and it was kind of like putting a square peg in a round hole a lot of times, right? And they would get done, and it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty darn good. And, you know, Craig would ask and talk to Archie, and he'd say, well, you think that one's okay? And he said, well, Archie's quote was, well, it's good enough for who it's for, okay? And that's what Archie would tell him. It's good enough for who it's for, okay? And that's pretty funny of Brother Archie picking at Craig like that, right? But ask yourself this and apply that concept. Do we have that same mentality sometimes in our spiritual lives? Do we have a mentality that what we do is good enough for who it's for? What and who are we doing this for? What and who are we coming to church for? What and who are we singing for? Are we leading songs for? Are we playing musical instruments for? Are we teaching classes for? Are we preaching sermons for? Are we attending for? Are we giving our attentiveness for? Are we serving and giving and working? Are we doing that for one another? Are we doing that for ourselves? Or are we doing it for the Lord? Is it good enough for who it's for? If you're going to do something for the Lord, do it right, okay? This can be applied in so many aspects of our lives as we examine ourselves. And we need to ask ourselves in our service, in our worship, in our attendance, in our attentiveness, in the labors that we put and preparations that we put into messages and preaching or in teaching Bible study classes, are we doing it for self-glory and satisfaction? For the glory and satisfaction of the people? Or are we doing it for the Lord? You can flip over to that passage in Colossians chapter 3. And it reminds us here. If you look in verse 23 of Colossians chapter 3. It says, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not unto men." Who are you here for today? Who are you here for any Sunday? We must remember as we come before the house of the Lord, as those saints that constructed the temple in the days of Solomon, as those saints that built this house and constituted this church 190 years ago, they weren't doing it solely for the people. They weren't doing it to have a social house.
They weren't doing it to have a warm place. They were doing it so that they would have a house to see and feel and experience the presence of God Himself. And it was a house for the Lord. So whatsoever ye do, do heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Jesus Christ. So as we reflect and think on that, we should ask ourselves, is what we are doing good enough for who it's for? And I pray that we will strive every day, because God never demands perfection from us. Okay? We're all imperfect people. But what God does require, what God does ask, is our absolute best. Okay? So though we may never give God the perfect worship, though we may never sing perfectly, though we may never preach perfectly, Lord knows that's true, though we may never teach perfectly, all God requires and asks is that we do our best. And if we are doing our best, then it is good enough for who it's for, okay? And in the construction of the temple, you see that. You see that in all the labors of those that labored for years in that service. They did their very best for the Lord, and the Lord looked down with blessings upon them and showed them great grace and mercy in all their labors, because they were sincere and they did their absolute best in the construction of His house. Okay? The third point that I want you to see, that I think you can gain and see through the story of the construction of the temple, is that teamwork makes the dream work, right? Teamwork makes the dream work. It's profound. I read so many passages this week, I didn't mark it down. I think it's in back there in 1 Chronicles in the early chapters. You can see that around chapter 28 or 29. Is that there were, I think, the better part of 150,000 men that came together to construct this temple. 150,000 men that worked for 7 years on the construction of this temple. Now, you think about that in ancient times, without modern machinery and tools and all of those things, and the profound magnitude of bringing that many people together and doing that much work for such a long time. It had to be extraordinary guidance and leadership and teamwork and unity that transpired through that construction process. And there's another amazing verse in 2 Chronicles that says that even upon the job site, so they build this temple for 7 years, right? And as they're constructing this temple for 7 years, there was not the sound of a hammer or an axe on the job site. They did all the work off-site and then moved it piece by piece to put it in, to keep reverence of the very sounds that were transpiring upon the grounds of the temple. That's an amazing thought. Think of the teamwork that had to happen for that to take place. Imagine taking your entire house and cutting every piece of wood and every block and every stone and every shingle that goes into it a mile or two or three away from where you're going to build it, and then carrying it in piece by piece and fitting it together with a still, peaceful silence. That's the teamwork that transpired in the construction of the temple. And what happens in many times in churches today, and that has happened over many years in churches, is that we have lost a sense of teamwork. And we have seen in many churches, many of which have been lost, that there are people and individuals inside churches that are too busy pulling a church apart because they're unwilling to pull together. Okay? And if we collectively as a body ever get to a mind and a heart to where we are pulling against each other, what ultimately will happen is that we will pull one another apart and we'll never see the fruits and the blessings of walking in the plans and purpose of God.
But there's beautiful things that happen when we set our hearts and minds to work together in unity and in vision and in purpose that God sets to us. Because we all have different ideas and we might have different dreams and plans and agendas and purposes. But ultimately, all that matters is if we are walking and following the will and purpose of God. And He can draw from all parts and all facets of the body and put those things, those ideas, those talents, those resources, those abilities together for the big picture of His purpose and plan. And I've seen it. It's a beautiful thing. We've seen it together in this church body. You think about the remodels and all the different construction projects that we've done in my time here. What a beautiful treasure that has been to see this group of people come together and do so much. And in all the things that we've done together, I heard hundreds of ideas, hundreds of suggestions, hundreds of different thoughts that came together for the vision of the Lord here in this place. And it's proof that God doesn't work through just one individual. That it's not just one man or one woman setting the vision and the plan and then everybody else falling in line behind it. No, I'm sure that in the construction of the temple you saw this here too. That you have those that have ideas and suggestions, and the Lord works in the whole body to bring these things together to show His full purpose and vision and plan to be completed and come true. And that's what we've seen collectively as a body. And it's a beautiful thing that happens in all of us, okay? And that we should strive for each and every day. Because teamwork does make the dream work, folks. And we need to see that and understand that. Another great thing that we see is that if we work together, you can accomplish some pretty great things, okay? And for a lot of us, we can sometimes, I think, grow distracted or even discouraged in the magnitude of the work that is before us. But I want you to remember something. Though the work is great, it's great to work. Okay? Though the work is great, it is great to work. We as God's people are made to work. We collectively as a church body are brought together to work. That's what we're told in Ephesians chapter 2 verse 10, right? We are created unto good works. We are brought together to work. And though the challenges that may be before us, though the projects and the plans that God gives us may be great, it is great for us to work together. You can see this if you turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 29, right? 1 Chronicles chapter 29, if you look there in just the first verse, it says, "Furthermore, David," this is in basically his last will and testament to Solomon and to all the people and the leaders of Israel. He says there in verse 1 of 1 Chronicles 29, "Furthermore, David the king said unto all the congregation, Solomon my son, whom alone God hath chosen, is yet young and tender, and the work is great. For the palace is not for men, but for the Lord God." The work that we have to do is great, folks. We need to understand that what God requires and asks of us is not going to get done quickly. It's not going to be easy work, okay? As I said, the construction of the temple, which was not a very big building at all, took 7 years because of the details and the intricacies, if I can say that word, of the construction, right? God always gives us plans and purposes of great work, but He never gives us some work that we can't do. But one of the things that we need to understand is that half of the reward of our labors comes in the work itself. You think about the nation of Israel during the time and construction of this temple, but I've also seen it here in Goshen as well. The kinship and bonds that are formed as you come together and labor with other individuals is beyond measure.
That is a blessing beyond measure of the friendships and the bonds that you form with people when you labor together in the purpose and plans of God. The love and charity that you see of your brothers and sisters, the pouring out and giving that we see and learn of one another as we work together for the purpose and plan of God is a blessing beyond measure. The true strength and abilities that we have by the grace of God and that we discover by working together is a blessing beyond measure. We can truly find out what we can really do by the grace of God and working together in unity. And the trust that you can gain, the trust and dependency that you can have in your brothers and sisters after you labor together on a hard project, that is a blessing beyond measure. See, half of the reward that we receive is not finishing the job, it's the labor itself. It's the trust and the kinship and the strength that we gain as we labor together for the Lord. And though the work is great, if we are brought together, there will be great unity. And we see that in that story. As you go into 2 Chronicles, you can see it as the temple is completed there in chapter 6 and chapter 7. And all the people come together. And one of the beautiful things that happens in that part of the story is that the nation of Israel had been brought together in a unity and accord that they had not had in their entire existence. As a nation, they had never been more united. They had never been closer. They had never been more at peace than they were at the completion of the temple. And that unity and that peace and that joy that they were all feeling together at the completion of the temple was a result of their unity in labor and in the great work that they had accomplished. There was great satisfaction and great peace and great joy in their hearts from that. And that's a promise that comes to us too. If we set our hearts and minds collectively together to labor in the plans and the will of God for us, okay? So in closing, I want you to remember, as a church today, my prayer for you and for all of us as a church today is that we will set our hearts and minds on the purpose and plans of God, that we'll dream big, that we'll do it right, that we'll work together, and that we will rejoice in the work and labors that we do for the Lord. That's my prayer for you.